Blog Talk Radio.
Your discretion is advised. Behind the blue curtain with retired police officer Stan Mason. Unscripted talk on police reform and race relations. Call 646-716-4621. Saturdays, 11 a.m. Eastern.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Sam Mason. We got a topic we're going to delve into today, and we're probably not going to be as long as usual because my angel, Shannon Mason, she's in Atlanta, so I'm going to make some time to see her. Sorry, I got to fall on the sword of sacrifice today, but we're going to be here for at least an hour, and we wanted to go over some things with the Breonna Taylor case, you know, and I know some folks are going to go, I'm sick of hearing about that. Well, you know, there's a lot of things to be learned out of that case that are slowly leaking out. But before we get there, of course, we have to acknowledge the co-hosts, the contributors, and we got, like I said, we got our own resident chief here. So we've arrived now. We got a chief. Y'all got any complaints with the show, go through the chief. You know we're going to throw you under the bus, Chief.
Yeah, I don't need to be thrown under the bus that early, though. I mean, yeah.
That's how we do it. We get, you know, we don't get your feet wet. We go ankle deep here.
Yeah.
I want to say good morning to everybody. It's been a heck of a week. I hope everybody is voting. If you can't vote, maybe you go out to the polls and stand in line for a little while for somebody who's trying to vote. You know, this is an important election. And everybody needs to participate. And we're going to start out this morning. We're going to give first shout out. It's got to go to our soon-to-be resident doctor in the house, Narandi Young. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
How was this week? Did you have a good week?
Okay. Just a regular old week. Nothing special about it.
Okay. Well,
same old. Go to work, come home.
You didn't light nobody up this week. You didn't get nobody's job this week. Everybody behaving up there?
As far as I know.
Because if they're not, you're going to know. And I'm going to know because it's going to tell me, LaRonda just went live. So, you know, we know how to deal with that. Big Joe, what's up, bro?
What's happening, man?
Oh, man, another day in paradise, man. How was your week up there? What's Chicago like?
Well, let's see. They just the mayor just put out a new edict, shutting down all bars and food establishments at 10 o'clock, so they put a moratorium out. And it's going statewide. It looks like we've spiked again. And I don't think we've reached the apex. We have not peaked up, whether it be Illinois or across the country. But, you know, you're talking about voting. I just saw an interesting stat last night. 18 to 39-year-olds in 2016 in three states voted for somewhere about 45,000. In Michigan alone, they show them at 247,000. Michigan, I think it was Michigan, Ohio, and one other state. They were almost quadrupled the 18-year-olds, which, again, is pivotal. I mean, we've seen that the 18-year-olds, as we used to call millennials, have turned the page on the election. I think that we're about to see again.
Well, this is definitely an interesting time to be alive. That's for sure. You know, let me go down and yell at Big John. We got Big John over on the Blog Talk. What's up, John?
Hey, good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing?
We're good, bro.
Good morning.
What's going on with your week, John? Don't get all quiet. Good morning. That's it. And none of John.
It's like good morning. Clifford's big red dog.
Well, I got a little surprise for Big Joe. I went and seen the doctor, and I'm thinking about getting the surgery done. And Joe, I may really actually one day fit the name Lil Joe, Lil John. So I'm thinking about it, bro. Very interesting week.
Hey, good luck to you, brother. We love and support you here, but I'm glad you cleaned that up because you said I got big news for Joe. I was like, what kind of announcement are we going to get here? You talk about the doctor.
Instead, if you thinking about any salad, it won't be none on this show.
All right. The 804, man, it's been a while. Is that Big Gus?
It sure is. How you all doing, family?
All right, brother. I know you, man. You've been through a lot.
Hello.
How you been, man?
Well, I'm sitting here bandaged up, recuperating, and excited about, you know, me still being an election official in New Kent County here, doing that absentee voter, man. I am so happy, man. I see so many people like us going out to the polls, voting early. And I'm working on it on my days off. I'm rehabbing, and I'm doing all of that. So, yeah, I'm happy now.
All right, brother. Well, you look here, we definitely appreciate you, man. We miss you, man, and I know you've been through a lot, man, and, you know. And, you know, you weren't real loud about it, but, you know, looking after you, man, and we care about you, send our blessings over there to you. You know, Reverend Tillman, Mike,
my brother.
Now we're going to go down to the resident chief in the house. What's up, chief?
Hey, good morning to everybody. Great Saturday. Like Joe said, with the voting, we actually have a voting location, polling station at our city hall. And I've never seen that many people vote. I don't even know what our numbers are. I think we're several thousand that have come through in week one. So, I mean, the numbers are way up, even in Texas. So people are getting out there, they're voting, and that's great. Love to see them show up at the polls. And even though they're going to see y'all, they keep coming to the PD, you know, they don't know where they're going. We have to direct them, so it kind of interrupts our day. But it's been a great week. You know, we did a big food drive for our local food pantry, donated a bunch of food. And I wanted to say that, you know, if you have the ability to give back, especially the food pantries, when we showed up yesterday, the line was insane for people trying to get food. So there's a lot of people out there hurting. I wish the government would get off their rear end and get some money out to some of these folks. But you know, if you have the ability to give back, be sure and give back. But we put a couple thousand pounds of food, and you know, we're hiring officers. So it's been a busy week for us here. But you know, great to make it to Saturday and be part of the show. So I'm excited.
You know, Chief, I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's the beauty of this show. We just go with what is, and we need to. That's a topic that we really need to touch on. It doesn't directly relate to police reform, but it is imperative that we talk about it. And I know in the Waco area, you have Caritas, that's one. Mission Waco, that's another. But, you know, wherever any of us are, there are food pantries, and some of those people in line never thought they would be there. So, I mean, some of us, when we shop and, you know, you buy a couple of canned goods, maybe buy two of what you usually buy one of, and donate them, because it might not mean a lot to a lot of us. But, you know, that's the beauty of America. That's what we're about, taking care of each other. And those cans don't have a R or a D on them. They're going to whoever's hungry, because Republicans get hungry just like Democrats. So, you know, if you could you talk just for a minute briefly? The organization that you guys went out there and supported, give them a shout out, because that's what we do here.
Yeah, it was Carrot Pops, which is one of the biggest food pantries here in McLennan County. They serve quite a few people. They have for years. Mission Waco, same thing. We usually will give them some food or money, but you know, it's heartbreaking when you pull up and you see that many people in line on a Friday at 10 a.m. I mean, it was down the street, and you know, they're just trying to get food. That's really what it's about. You know, of course, we got some looks. We pulled up into units, and you know, we backed up to the loading dock and started loading. The people are just kind of like, "What are they doing?" Well, we're trying to get back because we understand that there are people that are hurting. And Caritas, as he put out the call, that you know, they're running really low, and I'm pretty sure Mission Waco is too. because they have about double the amount of people coming to get food. So, you know, we're gonna continue to support them, and you know, this isn't the end. Normally, this time of year, they do the Food for Families drive. I don't think that's happening because of the COVID. So that's why we actually started doing our own donations or accepting donations, and we'll pick it back up. We'll give it a couple weeks, and then we know as we get towards the holidays, it gets much worse. So we're going to continue to do it and hopefully continue to deliver food, you know, every other week or every couple weeks out there. So to give back to the community, because that's really what's about. And as a government organization, as a police department, that's what we need to do. It doesn't matter whether it's going to people in Waco or Lakeview or wherever in the community, but just as long as people have the ability to get it, that's all we're interested in.
Well, you know what, Chief, I'm going to tell you, that's one of the reasons, and I'm not saying this because you're on here, because most people that listen to the show know I'll say what I think, but one of the reasons you're here is because you're genuine. You're 100. You're not one of these chiefs that comes on and postures, you know, and just that you didn't say, I sent my guys. That's what I listened for, see. My guys went out and did. You said we went and did, you know, and that's real, man. I mean, you're rolling up your sleeves and you're getting involved because people are hungry out here and people are starving. So, you know, we appreciate everything that you do, and we appreciate the time you make every Saturday, because I know all of us do, being police officers or former police officers, Saturdays are precious. You know, and just that you take the time to be here, you know, when you got a family and where are the dogs at right now. Okay. but you know, you're here with us, so we appreciate you, and we love you, and you know, we're glad that you're here. We got another.
Thank you.
Let me get another early contributor in here. Tyrone K. Dunmore, how are you? Gone once. Gone twice. All right, we're going to move on into today's show. It's been quite an interesting week in reference to the Breonna Taylor case. And I know a lot of people, some people may say, well, I'm tired of hearing about the Breonna Taylor case. But be that as it may, it is here. And we're going to have to deal with it and learn from it on both sides and all sides. And there's a constant trickle of things that are coming out that were inconsistencies and what was done, or mistakes in what was done. And a lot of it culminated became clear when Sergeant Mattingly, who was one of the officers present who was shot in the leg, did an interview with Michael Strahan on Good Morning America. And I don't know you guys' opinion, but sometimes you just got to know when to be quiet.
Yes.
That certainly did no justice to anybody's cases pending. It certainly, in my opinion, did not make the city look good. It didn't even make him look good in it. But, you know, I think that for the sheer ignorance that I saw in it, as far as him not knowing when to talk and when to be quiet, he brought out some truth of how he felt or how messed up this whole situation was. And so I'm going to play the clip from that show, and it's about 6 minutes long, so if y'all got to go get coffee, you can go get coffee and you can listen to it. But I want to make sure that everybody sees the little excerpts of some of the things that were said from him before we continue on, because we don't want anybody saying on that show they said this and that was out of context, and that's not what he said. We're going to play that little clip and look at it, and then when we come back from there, we're going to start talking about some of the inconsistencies, particularly with what I think is ununderstood, misunderstood entity, and that's grand juries. I think the average citizen doesn't know what a grand jury really is. It's not 12 people when we walk in and present all the evidence like normal court. And our attorney couldn't make it today, but we got our resident expert, Joseph J. Mosley, in the house. Yeah, did you hear that bus beep beep?
Build the tire marks.
Yeah. So let's take a look at this clip and then we'll jump right in.
We turn next tonight to the ABC News exclusive in the Breonna Taylor case. As a Kentucky judge now orders grand jury records unsealed, tonight one of the police officers involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor is now breaking his silence. What he says about the reaction to the Breonna Taylor case across this country Here's Alex Perez.
After months of protests across the country and demands that the officers be fired and criminally charged, tonight, for the first time, Officer Jonathan Mattingly, one of the officers who carried out that search warrant at Breonna Taylor's apartment and fired his weapon six times, is speaking out exclusively to ABC News and the Louisville Courier-Journal.
There have been marches, there have been protests. What was your feelings watching all that unfold after this?
Mostly frustration, because there was so much disinformation out. This is not relatable to a George Floyd. This is nothing like it. It's not a Ahmaud Arbery. It's nothing like it. It's not a race thing like people want to try to make it to be. It's not. This is a point where we were doing our job, we returned fire. This is not us going hunting somebody down. This is not kneeling on a neck. This is nothing like that.
Mattingly insisting the incident was not about race, but police procedure. And earlier today, nearly 3 weeks after that grand jury hearing, a judge now allowing all 12 jurors to speak publicly about the proceedings, one juror releasing a statement saying the grand jury was not presented any charges other than the three wanton endangerment charges against Detective Hankison, adding that they did not have homicide offenses explained to them. Officer Mattingly says he and the other officers announced themselves that night. Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, investigators say, shot him in the leg when the officers barged into the apartment.
We announced, we waited.
Walker telling investigators he fired because he didn't know who was bursting through the door. Police body camera video showing Mattingly later getting help. Breonna Taylor would be pronounced dead inside the apartment.
She's dying. We'll keep one person here on her.
An autopsy confirming she died of multiple gunshot wounds. An FBI ballistics analysis later determining that there was one fatal shot that hit Taylor that came from Detective Miles Cosgrove's .40 caliber weapon. A grand jury last month bringing no charges in Taylor's death. Officer Brett Hankison, one of the officers involved, was charged with allegedly endangering neighbors when he opened fire, but not in connection with Taylor's death. He has pleaded not guilty. And, David, while those grand jurors have been granted permission to speak publicly, they are under no obligation to do so. That judge today also agreeing to release parts of the proceedings that were not recorded by audio. So those documents will also now become public. David?
Oh, Alex, for us tonight. Alex, thank you. And we.
All right, let's get rid of Dave and Alex. You know, to get back to the show, we all just sat and watched this video. And I'd like to know from you guys and from John, what are your takeaways from what we just saw?
Well, you can hear me, Steve?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead, John.
I don't know, Stan. It's like... I feel all the emotions and passion goes away, and I think we have to really like start looking at the hardcore evidence and what is the exact evidence, and look at things dispassionately to get down to the facts of the case. I'm for sure Joe's going to come on and explain how that goes, because, you know, going through a trial, I've seen the, you know, things that go on prior to a trial and, you know, what people may think is evidence. And actually, as I was picking my jury, I had initially 4 counts of attempt murder, manslaughter, and conspiracy to commit murder. And as I was getting down to picking the jury, a couple counts disappeared because that's the thing that I think that we all should prepare for and all be aware of, is that as this case gets ready and, you know, lawyers start filing certain motions, you have to be dispassionate looking at it, because there's going to be things that are thrown out There's going to be evidence that's going to be introduced that no one never knew of. I think Joe probably, he's been in more trials than me, but I'm just looking at it from a procedural way, and pretty much I'm just waiting stand with some reservations because I know there's going to be things that's going to cause a huge uprise and arouse them even more emotions in people on both sides. So I'm just a little reserved, and I'm going to allow the show to present what it's going to present and, you know, add on as we go along. But I'm just wanting to share with people, you know, the things about my experience with a trial is that, yeah, there's going to be things that's going to get tossed out, and there's going to be evidence coming out, and what you think may be have been the case may not actually be the case once the real evidence comes forward.
All right, brother. Big Joe, what you think?
Well, it's interesting. The reality is that people don't understand what the grand jury is and how it functions. The grand jury is really it knocks out probable cause hearings. In this case, in the Kentucky case, what it allows the prosecutor to do is to come in and present evidence, and there's no adversarial interaction. So in other words, the prosecutor can come in front of the grand jury and present things, and there's no give or take. In a probable cause hearing, the defense has the chance to cross-examine witnesses and evidence. In a grand jury, you don't have that. That's where people get confused. It's a one-sided hearing. The other thing about grand jury, as opposed to a civil, a criminal court hearing, is that grand juries are seated anywhere from a month to a year. Now, I looked at the Kentucky statutes, which are also very interesting. The Kentucky statutes are different. However, that being said, they all maintain one thing. A grand jury is there where the prosecutor presents his or her case. In the case of Breonna Taylor, however, let me digress. In a grand jury, the jurors have the option to ask questions. They weren't given the full set of facts as we know them to be today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the one juror files suit, because normally grand juries, indictments are sealed almost forever. This will be the first time in my lifetime I've ever heard of. Well, I've heard of them being unsealed, but not this quickly, because the grand juror said, based on what they'd seen in the newspaper, his or her life was being threatened, and that it was to the betterment of the public to know the truth. And the judge sided with them, saying that they were correct, which is very interesting. So in that vein, you've got a grand jury that's got anywhere from 12 to 23 people sitting on it. And he didn't get the full set of circumstances. That's what they're saying is the problem.
Okay. Robert, what do you think?
Well, can we back up? Can we back that tape up? I want to rewind. Because I'm going to tell you, before we even get to the grand jury, this case is all messed up. I want to rewind back to the actual investigation that led up to the actual warrant. We got to go all the way back to that to understand why Daniel Cameron, the AG, only presented what he presented to the grand jury. The bottom line is, and Sergeant Mattingly, I'm calling him out because this was faulty police work. We have to go all the way back to the investigation. First of all, they never should have been in her home. If we look at the investigation, they had no reason, none, to run a warrant at her home. The postal inspector, Tony Gooden, said that a different law enforcement agency asked in January And this one in March, in January, not even this particular law enforcement agency, but a totally different law enforcement agency, went to the postal inspector in January and inquired as to whether or not there were packages going to Breonna Taylor's home that contained drugs. He concluded that there were not any packages going to her home that contained drugs or that were suspicious as far as drugs for her former boyfriend. This was in January. Sergeant Mattingly ran a warrant based off of the fact that supposedly Breonna Taylor was receiving packages at her home for the boyfriend, which he and the other officers on this warrant, who are responsible for investigating before they hit this house, did not go back and confirm whether or not she was receiving packages at her house for this young man who was supposed to be selling drugs. Had they done that, they would have learned that this had already been confirmed, that there were no packages coming to her house that were suspicious of drugs. The postal inspector said his office was never contacted by this Louisville Metro Police Department in reference to those packages. So what did they do? They looked and saw that an investigation previously had happened in January, but they did not look to find out what the findings were, and they put it in their warrant that packages were coming to her house for him, and they ran that warrant based on that information, meaning they never should have been there. So Daniel Cameron failed to hold them accountable for not doing a proper investigation, and he did not bring any charges against these officers who were responsible for investigating to do a warrant. The investigation was all jacked up. So it's a cover-up from day one. Let me just say that. They never should have been at this woman's house. And as for, what's the sergeant's name that did the interview with
Mattingly.
Jonathan Mattingly?
Yeah.
Let me say this. For him to say that it's not a race issue, that's a lie. This is where systemic racism comes into play. Because had that been a middle-class white female, I guarantee you they would have confirmed information through the postal inspector before they ran that warrant. But because it was a black woman that nobody really cared about, in their mind, it was okay to take information that had never been confirmed and not do a proper investigation and run that warrant. So it's deeper than police procedure. And when we get to the grand jury, they're only giving information based on the actual incident that happened that day. This goes way back to when they first started this investigation and wrote that bogus warrant. So I just wanted to add that.
You know, look, here, look, just remember this. A regular jury decides the facts of trial cases. Grand juries do decide whether probable cause exists, criminal charges. They were not presented with the evidence because of Cameron. They were not presented the evidence that would have probably got these guys or these rogue agents charged. Is there a problem with the warrant? If you read it, yes.
Yeah.
Are there factual things in there that are not supported? Yes. Rhonda just pointed that out. But more to the point, understand some grand juries have the opportunity. They have far more latitude than a regular jury. But if you don't know what the circumstances are, I mean, it's a I can't really say that, but it's a S show, and he directed it. He knew what he was doing because in this vein, he can stop them from being recharged.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's almost an issue of double jeopardy, and all of us understand that. And it also goes to the issue of qualified immunity, which is all different issue in and of itself. But the fact that he did not present to the grand jury all this evidence, these gentlemen, having watched that interview, he needs to sit somewhere and be quiet and thank God that he's not in jail.
You know, Joe,
I was waiting for Michael Strahan to bring up the fact about that warrant and, you know, the inconsistency in
yes.
the warrant. Mm-hmm. But apparently, maybe they didn't do the research. I don't know. But they should have put him on the spot on that. Why didn't you go and confirm? Why didn't you contact the postal inspector? You mean to tell me you're running a warrant based on packages and you didn't even involve the postal inspector? And the postal inspector had already confirmed in January mm-hmm. nothing was coming to her house. We know it's March now, so you might need to start that investigation again with the postal inspector, which you did not do. That was a faulty warrant.
And, you know, Rhonda,
never should have happened.
Just so the audience can keep up with what we're saying, because they watch Matlock or whatever it is they're watching now on TV, and people think that we just write a warrant up desk and go out there. And you know, it's we have to write an affidavit first, which pretty much is our story, our justification as to why we need a warrant, that we complete the warrant, and we take it to the judge. The judge reads the affidavit, and it's really the judge isn't there. He's relying on our truth and our credibility. And see, this is what makes Breonna Taylor's situation so damaging, because it's not as simple as the warrant that Detective James wrote or the affidavit that he wrote to get the warrant. This reflects on police officers and detectives across the country. It is a ripple effect. So when people say, well, why are they doing the show on this? We're doing it because there are good detectives, there are good police officers, there are good investigators that are doing affidavits to this day. Whether it's a simple arrest affidavit for a warrantless arrest or whether it's a drug raid. And this is going to have rippling impact all the way across the spectrum. But one of the things I found most telling about his interview that really, really reached out to me and kind of, I didn't go into shutdown mode, but I went into, I'm listening really now to what you're saying mode, is when he was asked, you know, what troubled him about the whole event. It wasn't immediately that Breonna Taylor was dead. It wasn't the inconsistency that would bring discredit upon the profession, which he goes later on in the in-depth interview to explain. His main number one thing was he said, quote, my number one feeling that I was frustrated
right.
with all the
right.
disinformation. Well, the disinformation started with the affidavit that led to the search warrant, that led to the death, that led to this explosion that we've seen. But he made it immediately about him and the victimization of the institution. You know, I think, and all of us have done warrants and been on search warrants, and you know, we've all had this guy say, I'm going to ATS, attempt to serve, whether it's a traffic ticket, domestic violence, murder, whatever. You're sitting around midnight shift, whatever, everybody's going to go get this guy on a warrant. I'll tell you one thing with me. A warrant is a warrant, and I always want to know who wrote this warrant. I want to know. I don't, DET period, which means detective, does not impress me. Because I know lazy detectives like they're lazy officers. So I want to know who wrote this warrant. There are some detectives that their word was good with me. I could run with it. Once I saw their name on that affidavit, I know it's good. I'll go with it. But I'm still going to read and try to find out a little bit about the case before I get there. But there are some, well, it's a warrant. Well, if I run into them, I run into them. And this was one of those types of situations. And Chief, if you would jump in here.
Yeah, I've got a lot to say about this, and I want to talk organizational issues that I see. And I know you guys have looked more into this than I have, and I've tried to do a little research here and there. I didn't go back and I watched the interview with Michael Strahan and that detective last night. I know you want to get your story out there, the officer, but you should have not even gotten on TV. You did yourself no favors. It was a horrible interview, and whoever advised you to do that, you need to quit listening to them. That's the first thing. Secondly, organizationally, when we start talking about search warrants, so in my past life, you know, I've been part of SWAT, I've been part of a tactical team, and as an organization, a commander for a multi-jurisdictional unit. We had a lot of checks and balances in place before any search warrant took place, and ops plans. I'm not even talking about as a team leader. And I know from a small agency standpoint, we cannot be the only one that does this. I know there's agencies that do this. And so, you know, you got an ops plan.
that goes up through the chain of command, and usually it's signed off on by an A chief or the chief, depending upon how big the organization is. But somebody signs off on it, and they're the ones that do those checks and balances. And if there's inconsistencies with the warrant or there's issues, that, I mean, you should have several sets of eyes that look at this and question. You know, so from an administrative standpoint, I'll tell you that when that ops plan comes, and because I have some familiarization with SWAT, there are multiple ways to do this. Yeah, there's always the, you know, no-knock search warrant, which, again, in Texas, I think I've maybe gotten half a dozen no-knock search warrants in 25 years. They just don't come that easily, number one. But is this the most appropriate way to run the search warrant? Could there be a breach and hold? Could we pop the doors and call people out? Could we wait for them to leave the apartment in the morning and take them down on a vehicle assault? I mean, you know, because ultimately we got to think about the safety of the people who we're dealing with, whether they're bad guys, good guys, whatever, whether they loosely connected Brooke Taylor with this case. You know, is this a main player? And those are the questions that I would have asked. How important is this search? Like, and I don't know, Joe, if you could answer, were all these searches done in conjunction with one another? Were they done at the same time, or were they done separately?
From what I've read,
because there are multiple warrants.
I everything you said, I agree with. But let me just say this. First of all, whoever told him to do that interview, he should, if that's his attorney, he should fire him. The other thing that in my career that we used to do and we trained other detectives to do was watch body language. Now, certainly you can't quantify what his language is, but you can qualify it within your own self. And if you watch that interview, there's problems with it. That being said, I totally agree that at least with us, there were two to three levels, maybe four levels. No knocks, I guarantee you, coming up would be banned. Unless this guy has killed multiple people, no knocks are going the way of the dinosaur. I can see that cameras are going to be mandated nationwide. Someone on the Facebook feed said, you know, the judge beat his bar. The judge didn't do anything wrong.
They relied on information.
Correct. The organization messed up from the plan to the execution. And if I read their organization right, they should have been executing the warrant anyway. Their SWAT team was supposed to execute.
That's right.
So we've got another. There's some major, because now it doesn't pass this thing called the smell test. And I learned it a long time ago. If it looks like bullshit, smell like bullshit, you ain't got to taste it though, it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was going to say that. I come from an organizational culture where we had narcotics units, but narcotics units didn't run warrants. SWAT teams ran warrants because of the danger associated with the training those individuals had.
Right.
And even on top of that, with the organizational plan, the ops plan, there was a threat matrix that was always put in. You can get those through the NCFOA. You can get them through most state tactical organizations, and that threat matrix tells you the threshold based on the numerical value on how dangerous this is going to be, and it's based on criminal history, known guns, known violence, and a bunch of things. And so, you know, when we would present those on a warrant with threat matrix, now threat matrix didn't go to the judge, but it went to administration. So it may have met the threshold of no knock, but there may be that section there that says there's four kids in the house. And so admin, myself, would say, no, we're not doing a knock and announce. We know that these are going to happen. We know that we're going to run these warrants, and we know that we're going to have, okay? And I might be a little wrong, but I'm certainly not the SWAT expert, but I sit on a committee for the international chiefs, for the patrol tactical committee, and on that is the executive director of the National Tactical Officer Association. And I remember years ago having these conversations about, you know, breaching doors and calling people out. Now that may sound to the, you know, the most tact, you know, most tact officers like, that's a bunch of crap. But, you know, if we know we're going to go running into a gun battle, why are we running into the gun battle? Why don't we do something different? That's why we have vehicle assaults. That's why we have people load. And again, each one is going to be the organization different. Each situation is going to be different. And before I get off, I wanted to say this. I wish the attorney was here because I really wanted to talk to her. But I noticed in I know this, and you guys know this, that attorneys will, well, hey, you know, we could go reckless, but I can prove wanton endangerment easier, and I can get the conviction on this. So, you know, and I'm going to be interested to see what happened and what the dialogue was in that grand jury on how that came about to be that offense. And, I mean, and lastly, I don't know if this has changed. I don't know why this has changed or where in the hell it came from. But every time I pull the trigger on my gun, if I have to fire my weapon, I am responsible for every single round that comes out of that gun.
Absolutely.
Just because I'm an officer under a warrant doesn't mean it gives me King's X that you're free and clear because you shot. And I don't know where that changed. I mean, to me, you're still held accountable for that. Whether it's criminally or civilly, you're going to be held accountable for pulling the trigger and shooting the wrong person. And we teach that today. Now, I don't know if that's the way it is in Kentucky, but that's the way it is here in Texas and the way it should be across the nation.
You know, Chief, I think that people ought to pay particularly close attention to Breonna Taylor's case because, you know, being a police officer, that's a difficult job, sure. It's hard, and especially when you're investigating cases and trying to develop probable cause. And then when you start talking about, you know, doing a raid, you know, that's a whole different ball of wax right there. And that's a lot of planning. You know, okay, we might get a barricaded suspect or we call SWAT or whatever. And that's something that's fluid and it's moving. But when you start talking about these drug raids and things like that, these things are not just instantly put together. Most tactical teams, they may spend 2 or 3 days ahead of that warrant and may cancel it just maybe because it rained. Maybe because the blue Ford in the front, it does not take a lot for them to go, we're not comfortable with this. Or they may just say, it doesn't feel right. We don't know something. So I want the community to understand, they're not just doing these raids and kicking in doors. Most of the professional SWAT teams out there, they are planning. And just because the detective writes a warrant, that SWAT commander may go, this we don't have enough homework here. I know what you want to do. You want to get this guy out of this house. But
no, that's exactly true. I have done that, and I've seen officers, yes, SWAT commanders, that get a valid warrant. They're like, hey, this isn't fly. I need some more information. I need you to give me something, a better piece of info. But years ago, we used to run these warrants, and we did these no-knocks, and we did these, you know, dynamic assaults on these residents, especially during the 90s when we were, you know, more on drugs.
Yes, sir.
In order to recover the drugs, that's what we did. And so, with, you know, back again, former agency, but we developed rather than, because where were they going to go to dump? They're going to go throw it in the toilet. And it's easy on single stored residents to do this, but we would breach it and shoot the toilet with a less lethal beanbag or baton round.
Right.
To break the toilet, we have a separate team breach the bathroom. And we breached the door. And so, because, you know, we're running right back to the bathroom to flush it. So, you know, some of that dynamic, but that was to save the dope. But I always thought that was insane. I mean, yeah, I'd love to get you with 17 kilos, but you're not going to flush 17 keys of coke down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about a gram of crack,
well,
I mean, if I've got the warning, I've got enough to get in your home and arrest, then I don't necessarily need to have your little crack vial. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, let's understand something that warrants are time sensitive also in most jurisdictions.
Right.
If you don't serve that warrant within X amount of time, it dies. It dies on the vine. And you have to return that warrant. People don't understand that. Have there been warrants that have been returned? Yes. Have there been returned warrants that have been returned negative? Negative means nothing was found. So we got to understand all those issues.
Mm-hmm.
In my lifetime, we had a drug dealer here that most people probably heard of. His name was Fluky Stokes. Fluky Stokes had a series of narcotics house across the city. We hit one house in conjunction with ATF, DEA, and a few other alphabets, and they were using acid. So you can't recover from acid. But what the junkies did was they scooped up dirty needles and threw them at us like darts, melted my vest off. But that was then. But going back to the base point, I think that no knocks will be the target of the next Department of Justice focus, and it should be. These guys did not. as it's called. They certainly did not serve the people of Kentucky very well. And in this case, this interview was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And again, if I was his attorney, I'd just tell him to shut up.
And Joe, to the credit, though, of SWAT teams and officers who serve ones, you know, across the country, you know, they, like I said, they do their homework. And their biggest thing is always, when we went up to houses at night or whatever, our first thing was not that arrest. It was, is this safe for us?
Yes.
Can I come back tomorrow? And I, you know, I will stand by this. I believe there is no shame in returning a warrant, because if I'm the judge and I want to know why it came back, judge, I can't put my finger on it, but it just didn't feel right now. Reapply later and get it. So we don't have Breonna Taylor's and we don't have these other instances. And I'm going to say, and this is just Stan speaking for Stan, one of the reasons why Breonna Taylor sticks out so much to me is if we look on the surface of just what happened, okay? He doesn't know who's coming in. He's shooting at the door, like any one of us in here are going to do it. Somebody
right.
comes in my house at 3 o'clock. The officers are getting fired upon. They're going to do what they're trained to do. They're going to fire back. So let's just take that dynamic. This is what aggravates me, and this to go into a side route that we don't have to go down, but I'm just going to say it. Where was the NRA when Philando Castile was killed? Not a word from him. You know, where was the NRA when Miss Alexander was put in jail and convicted for defending herself? Not a word from him. Where is the NRA on this? Not a word from him. And this is not a shot at NRA members. God bless you. You're an NRA member. This is not an attack on you. I can only see the NRA by what I see the NRA do. And I have yet. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. Somebody find it, post it on my Facebook. I'll proudly display it and say I was wrong. I have never heard of the NRA in these types of situations involving firearms and home defense, when the person involved was African-American, they have never said a word. Never said a word. And so we look at that, and this case is going to make it harder for officers to get search warrants. It's going to make our jobs 10 times harder. And some of that is going to come because unions and people in a position to affect change are not bringing all these things to light. It has just, this Breonna Taylor case is going to make policing for the good officers a lot harder. Because other states are looking at this, and other cities are looking at it.
I think it's also going to bring grand jury back into focus.
Mm-hmm.
Because the grand juries have been, forgive me for saying this, have been getting pimped. They've been getting played. Because people don't understand the power of grand jury. Grand jury is probably the most powerful thing we have right now. So until that focus is uncovered, until some light is put onto that, they're going to keep on playing. Because I guarantee when these transcript comes out that this guy, what he did or did not say, he'll lose his job in the next go round.
Yeah, and the grand jury. I mean, unless you ever served on one or testified before one, you don't really understand that it is a lot less formal than your normal criminal jury or even your civil jury. There's a lot more that takes place longer. They can stop recording. They can ask questions off the record. There's things that happen in there that I don't think normal folks, normal public would understand. And it's made up of your citizenry. I mean, I won't ever be on a grand jury probably because I'm not supposed to be on board. That's just going to happen. And then neither will anybody on this panel. That's just the way that it's going to be. So we'll never have the opportunity to put our professionalism and 2 cents into some of these cases and ask these questions. And that's neither here nor there. But the grand jury is the thing in itself. It's very powerful.
What?
And has the ability to do a lot of things that I think most folks are not really aware of.
Correct.
I have a question.
Again, the jury said from anywhere from a month to a year. In Kentucky, they said from 30 days to 150. But on a federal. Bias changes too. You can have what's called a petite jury, and you can have the full jury. Anywhere from 6 to 12 for petite. For a full grand, could be up to 12, 23. But these guys are impaneled for up to a year.
He wanted a big one. It's big.
I have a question.
Hey, Gus.
Hey, for those who are qualified to answer, now, isn't a grand jury supposed to get to the truth, or are they just supposed to get a conviction? Because it seems to me that if they want to get to the truth, they have to listen to all of the evidence, not just the evidence that will get a warrant to get a conviction.
And that's where the mistake is. Grand juries are not trials. They're there to bypass what's called the probable cause hearing. So what you do is the prosecutor presents his or her case. Then, it bypasses what's called probable cause or preliminary hearing, because no one gets to rebut in a grand jury. In a probable cause hearing, the defense gets to rebut, gets to call witnesses. There is no defense in the grand jury. It's one-sided, period. And they're not there to be triers of fact. They're triers of should we go forward to trial.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Makes plenty of sense.
All right, let me go try to grab this caller again. Maybe the background is down. 972 area code. Last 4, 1269. Good morning. Going what? All right. They're going to be gone. Okay. You know, this is, I think that there's so much in this case before we even get to the actual shooting. And LaRonda said it perfectly. We have to unwrap. Did this even need to be here? And this is the problem. You know, did it need to even go that far? Another thing that disturbed me with this whole incident was that the lack of body cameras in 2020. And one of the things SWAT does, even before there was a such thing as body cameras, most SWAT units had maybe two guys that ran cameras that stood off and filmed the entry. Why? Because they want to learn from it. What did we do wrong? What can we do better? Do we need to space more? And this, I mean, in the 90s, they were doing that with big video cameras just to train themselves, to go back and look at how they did what they did. And just on this one, to not have accurate video footage or enough video footage and to not have what's the question we're getting? Did they knock? Did they not knock? Cameras would have told us all of that. And in a department that big, I mean, what is the federal government had a grant. They were giving cameras away. You basically paid for your storage years ago. I mean, if you got a department in 2020 that either doesn't have cameras or doesn't want cameras, you need to be at your city council officers too screaming, because cameras don't only show bad behavior. Cameras save officers when citizens make bullshit complaints, which happens all the time.
I can see the new DOJ coming in mandating if you're over X amount of size department-wise, you must have cameras, and you have the ability to edit them, if that makes sense. Like in CPD, you can't edit what's on that film. There's some agency within Illinois, if one car is in proximity of another car, the camera comes on whether you like it or not.
Yep.
And I worked on a case where a guy had lied, a police officer actually lied, where he beat this kid up, and it wasn't his camera that caught it. It was another car coming on the scene.
You know, I'll say this, because I will always give shout-outs to the citizens of Waco, because that's technically who bought our stuff while we were there. It wasn't the city manager. It wasn't the chief. It was the citizens that paid for it. And I'll say this. When we went to the camera system, there were three different systems that we tried. They sent us free cameras, and on every ship, there was an officer that had that camera. And it was for us, the officers, not detectives, not administration, but those of us who are out there in the field working, where we could interact with that officer on our ship and ask them how that camera worked. And we would ask things like, man, does it fall off? Is it bulky? Is it heavy? Is it in the way? How's the video look? And, you know, 30 days or 60 days, whatever it was, we tried these three, and to the credit of the department, they let the officers who worked the street, not drug enforcement, not SWAT, not the traffic unit, not the detectives, not the administrators, They let the men and women in patrol pick which camera we wanted, and we went with the Axiom camera. And to the credit, and this is where I'm going to give the city a lot of credit, and they've done this with all of our equipment. They pull no punches. How much is storage going to be? You know, we went to the grant and got the cameras, but how much is storage going to be? And they paid for it. And then they said, you know what, we want our cameras to where when somebody turns the taser on, just powers it up, not pulls the trigger, everybody within a certain distance, your cameras automatically go come on. If an officer's got a car pulled over on a traffic stop and you drive by that car and they got their lights on, your camera's going to come on because that says we're covering everything from every angle. Now, if Joe's camera doesn't come on, that's because Joe has his camera turned off. And so, you know, I think when you are that transparent, and if you got citizens to say, we'll pay the money for it if it's going to keep us safer, if it's going to keep us alive, if it's going to help officers, if it's going to cut down on losses, we'll pay the money as citizens. We will do it. And so I don't understand these bigger or medium-sized large departments that are still running around here today with cameras. Every patrol car out there has got a camera.
It fits the narrative. You know, it fits the narrative that, you know, again, we got to watch how these discussions are framed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start getting into contractual stuff, we start getting into the weeds, but it's distracting from the overall conversation and which is the public right to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, understand that we serve the public, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all. And until these guys get out of their minds that this is a fraternity or sorority, whatever the case may be, then we're going to continue to go down this path of less than righteousness. That's it. I mean, that's the way I see it.
For me, with this whole case, they never should have been there. Because I know, as someone who ran those types of warrants, the no-knock warrants or whatever, I understand that when you hit that door and a gun is facing you, you are going to do what you're trained to do, which is what they did in that moment. However, the problem was they never should have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the problem was for me. Not that they ended up shooting back when the boyfriend shot at them. The problem was they never should have been there. They put that young man and that young woman at risk when they didn't have to. They never should have been there. And that was the issue for me. None of this, we shouldn't even be discussing this because they never should have been there. And I think until a lot of these major leaders and people that are covering this case go back to that, we will never get the real story about what happened in this case. Because the bottom line is they never went to the postal inspector and confirmed that packages were coming to this house for this young man that was possibly dope, which was the reason they were there. Never should have been at that apartment.
And you know,
never.
LaRonda, can I say something to you? Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead, John.
I can't hear him. What he said.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, this is to anybody on the panel. Procedurally, I think everyone agrees what was done was improper. And but the question is whether or not the officers acted unreasonable once the shot was taken. And I think that you kind of answered that question. So now, and there's going to be major problems with this case is because, okay, let's say we concede the fact that the officers should have never been there. But they was there and they was shot at. Now, criminally, where do the criminal aspect of it, in order to get a conviction, how do they act criminally? That's going to be like a major question, because you can say, okay, yes, this happened, but here's the thing: they acted within the color of the law when it came to this. How are you going to get a criminal conviction with that being the case? Anyone can answer that?
Well, for me, I'm going to be honest with you. I did not expect a murder charge or anything else to come out of this case because they shot after being shot at. Mm-hmm. But I did expect for them to be held accountable for going and running a warrant at a house that they never should have been at. I believe they should have been held accountable for that, and they are not being held accountable for that, and that's a problem. That is a major problem. The other thing is, for me, I think the amount of shots that they shot were excessive.
And Lorraine, you know, this is not, and I know a lot of people are looking at Breonna Taylor's case, and you know, people want to, you know, say, well, it's a black thing. You know, let's not forget that I think 2.5 years ago, and I don't recall the couple's name now, but there was a white couple in Harris County, Texas, that's down around Houston, that false information was given to a detective that developed a warrant, which resulted in a raid, which both resulted in both of those people being killed. And they were white as snow. Exact same circumstance. So this is not an isolated event to Louisville. It's not necessarily a pandemic that's spreading through our policing. But the thing is, this is being done because of people are lazy. People are not checking other people's work. People are buddies. So, oh, well, Bob said it. It's good. We're finding out every day police officers are citizens. We are capable of lying like everybody else. If I choose to check your work, don't get your feelings hurt. Every one of us on here did police reports. And who read our reports and checked them for mistakes? Our sergeants. Even when I was there 25 years, I had to turn my reports in to my sergeant to read over. Maybe Stan missed the misspelling. Maybe Stan used one word where he said, Stan, did you mean to say this? Or maybe he didn't tell me how to write it, but they read over it. So you can make your corrections or whatever. So it's not that we make mistakes, and we're going to keep making mistakes because we're human. But we have to be able to accept criticism and have a mechanism in place that says before we go do this, we need to check this. Every single one of us on here was responsible for one thing, checking out your car before you started that shift. Now, if we can check out something as simple as a car and make sure it works, or a taser or a gun or a radio or an aspirin or whatever it is we're carrying, why are we not double and triple checking before we go to somebody's house in this climate today with the castle doctrine, the stand your ground, and all these other things? There needs to be mechanisms in place, and I agree with Joe. Under a new DOJ, there will be those mechanisms will come in place, and policing is going to get harder, and don't blame the community, because Breonna Taylor is dead. It's not her fault. That couple in Harris County is dead. It's not their fault. This is sloppy police work, and LaRonda is 1,000% on point. We shouldn't even be having this show right now.
You know, the other thing is, the reason they settled with her family is because they know that they never should have been in her room. That's why they settled. She was murdered because of faulty police work. They never should have been at her house. Bottom line, they ran the warrant at the wrong place. That is not where that young man was receiving his packages or whatever. They ran the warrant in the wrong place, and they settled with her family because they know that they ran a warrant in the wrong place. Bottom line, everybody that was in that line of getting that warrant to the place where it was to be executed should be held accountable in some fashion for this young lady's death. Because they never should have been at her house. They never should have ran a warrant at her house. And that is for me.
I was going to say, and let's not forget, there's still a DOJ investigation going on in this case.
Yes.
I mean, so the FBI is conducting an investigation into it, which brings up an interesting point when you start looking at the issues of 1983 claims and the order of importance. You know, one of them is the lawful objective. And so if it's held to be true that they shouldn't have been at that location to begin with, then they're not there serving a lawful objective. Therefore, then you'll have a 1983 claim. Mm-hmm. Just on that one simple one. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the DOJ plays this one out. I know that they're going to, make a ton of changes for that department, probably for the state. And then, like you said, Stan, that's going to trickle down to all of us, you know. And the SWAT teams, there are some, and it's actually happened over the last decade, that are wearing body cameras when they conduct their raids. But I also want to make the point that this was not SWAT team.
No, that's right. It was not. That's right.
Detectives. So, you know, I kind of take it and relate it back to my department, your former department. You know, and I know your policies for Waco with your former agency, because we use pretty much the same type of policy as far as the body camera is concerned. If you're conducting law enforcement business, that camera has to be on.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean about SWAT team. I mean, if my detectives have body cameras, if they're out there on a scene and we're serving a warrant or picking somebody up or we're conducting searches or doing whatever, guess what's on? The body camera. So I have an issue as an administrator and maybe a policy issue with that agency. There is a body camera there. Why is that body camera not on? And again, mm-hmm. I think we said it earlier, if it were on, we would have the true story as to what happened, or at least a better look at how this whole thing unfolded versus you know, everybody's.
Well, before we get out of here and wind this down, I want to go back through and get everybody's final thoughts. And just from everybody, you know, what do you think can happen? I don't have any faith in Attorney General Barr and this current administration that is basically just torn down, you know, consent decrees like they're going through with urban renewal. I have zero, and that's not the FBI. I'm talking about the AG's office, right? And then the AG there, I have zero respect for him. You know, he's a political puppet. This is Stan's opinion. He's more busy in running a pseudo campaign. So I don't think that unless we see a change, I don't see anything sweeping coming from the AG's office, but that's just from the experience of what I've seen from him. But we're going to go back down through and let everybody, how do we fix this? What do you think the outcome, the fallout will be, and how do we move forward from it?
Let me kick this off. Let me just kick this murder hornet's nest over with. You have a nominee who said that using the term nigga in the workplace does not create a hostile work environment. Well, let me be clear. If you call me a nigga on duty, you got a problem with your motor.
Is it going to get hostile?
It's going to get real
hostile.
Saturday. But
and I have two black children.
Well, we'll leave that alone, too. But here's the thing. As I said earlier, and I want you to listen very clearly, I said under the new DOJ,
mm-hmm.
because they've torn down consent decree, mm-hmm. they said all kinds of things, they become the public arm of, which they're not supposed to be, they become the public arm of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not their job, completely without privacy. However, going forward, the new DOJ will come back and reinvestigate this case. And I guarantee you, some charges will be laid forth. I'm done.
All right. Let me go. Big John. Come on, bro. Let me give you a minute or two.
Yes. I believe LaRonda is correct that people should be held accountable, but unfortunately, it may have to be civilly. See how criminally they are going to be able to convict anyone of acting reckless once the gunshots were fired. Procedurally, they was incorrect. I also want to say that if Joe could come back on before we hang up, I know that in a probable cause hearing, a person can testify at that hearing, and they don't have to use, he don't have to testify in front of a jury once it's picked, because they can use his testimony from a probable cause hearing. Now the jury don't get to see his emotions, his body language. Is that the same for grand jury hearing? Is that testimony for the grand jury only, or can that be used at trial?
Yes, it will be used at trial. But again, the question becomes, there's no cross-examination.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that gets to question that witness is the prosecutor. So if I'm going to lead you down that golden path, I'm going to have you ask the questions I want. And that's why that's the problem. According to a recent report by the DOJ, I think it was in 95, one of the attorneys said that the grand juries have become the biggest rubber stamps in the country. They've become a joke. And that's the problem.
Okay, let's go over here. Let me see. The Big 804, Big Gus. Well, once again, brother, welcome back. About a minute. What you think? How can we fix this?
I think the way we fix this, we should excuse me. The way we should fix this is reform the whole grand jury process. And I say that because if you got an AG who can just bring any charge or present anything off the top of his head to the grand jury to get to get an indictment, then to me that whole system's flawed, because he can say whatever's on his mind to the grand jury to get an indictment without, you know, with leaving the facts aside alone. He can get an indictment, and to me, I don't think that system's fair, but it should be reformed, the whole grand jury process.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. Big Chief, come on.
I heard my favorite phrase, consent decree, thrown out. Consent decrees are a joke. Because the consent decrees worked, they would go away. We've got agencies that have been under consent decree for decades. So, you know, that whole thing needs to be revamped to begin with. They need to have somebody that they can put in there and fix it. That's what they need. They need somebody that can make actionable change. And you know, if they got to fight, they got to fight. Grand jury process, yeah, it needs to be looked at. You need to discuss some of the issues that are upcoming. And the last thing I want to say is, I want, you know, if you're interested, go look at the Kentucky law, go look at reckless homicide, and read the statute and read what is required to be charged with reckless homicide, which is a Class D felony, which is the same level of punishment of the wanton endangerment or whatever they charge the officer with. But you know, make up your own mind. Just see what that charge is and see if it fits. To me, I think at a minimum, it should have been a reckless homicide is what the charge should have been. But that's me. I'm not an attorney. Yeah. You know, and I do know attorneys will go after a lesser charge because it's something they can prove. That's why I wanted the attorney on here today. So I wanted at least one attorney to admit that to me finally. But I know that that's what they do. So anyway, go look it up and see for yourself. You know, before you start talking about it should be murder and it should be this. You know, there are certain culpable states that people have to be in order for those specific charges. But for me, very easy, reckless homicide as I read it, and I think that should have been the appropriate charge versus the stuff. And I agree with Joe. They should probably, that guy, that sergeant or detective or whatever he is, should fire his attorney for giving him that horrible advice for going on TV.
And Chief, just to, you know, for LaRonda closes us out, just to make your point, the biggest example we've got of what you just said was, let's look at Freddie Gray's killing. You know, all those officers got charged with first-degree murder. There's no way you were going to get that. And who ended up getting convicted? I think it was seven of them. Who? Nobody.
Nobody.
Not because nobody wasn't accountable,
nobody.
But you couldn't prove what you charged them with. You overcharged them.
Because you got proved intentionally and knowingly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you cause the death of somebody recklessly because of action or inaction, you know, that's reckless. That's either what they call reckless homicide in Kentucky, they call it manslaughter here in Texas. You know, across the state, it's the same charge, but it's being reckless about or doing something that does kill somebody, but it's not intentionally or knowingly. So, you know, you gotta file the appropriate charge. You can't just beat around the bush and try to BS this thing. You know, file what should be.
All right, amen. Loretta, can you take us out?
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with what everybody has already said, so I don't have anything to add. And, again, I just stand on the fact that they never should have been there, and his should have rolled. People should have been terminated because they never should have been there. It was faulty police work. And I think that because his did not roll, Sergeant Mattingly, with his arrogant self, he could get on national news and do this interview, which he should have never done. But you know, I would like to get him off the top. Why doesn't he come talk to us? I'd love to ask him some questions. Love to talk to Sergeant Mattingly. So with that, I'm going to leave and be quiet because I get a little upset.
sick. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to reach out to him. Let me or Joe do that, because you just took so many jobs out there. He's probably scared of you. We're
not scared of him.
You know, well, we're definitely, that's interesting. I think I'm going to put something out and see if we can get him, you know, to come on. That's a good point, LaRonda. I appreciate that. We'll get him on. But I wanted to thank everybody that came in this weekend. Waco, I can't see your Facebook post, but of course I'll go back and hit them. Like I said, my niece is in town. My little Shannon, my angel, is here in Atlanta. So when I get off of here, I'm going to see my baby. Hadn't seen her in a while, so she's excited. We're going to go have lunch. Yes, I'm going to wear a mask, but I can't eat food, so I'll take it off to eat. But, if Rona gets me through my angel, then I'm just God. I'd rather get it from somebody I love and know than a stranger. You know, sharing is caring, you know. So, anyway, we appreciate everybody. You guys have a safe weekend. Everybody be safe. You know, just be careful out there in the community. Keep your mask up. You know, Rona is real and life is not a Trump rally. And with that, we're going to get out of here.
Viewer discretion is advised. Behind the blue curtain, with retired police officer Stan Mason. Unscripted talk on police reform and race relations. Call 646-716-4621.